Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Live from the Auto Farm Studios on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Fun show today. And we have some local sports content. That's a few far and in between right now. Not a lot happening on the local front. We are going to be joined by Casey Edgehouse. He's the new head coach of the Emory High School golf team. Coach Edgehouse is going to join us over the phone in just a moment. Also the manager at the Millsite Golf Course. Looking forward to that conversation right now. Anytime we can get anything local, I'm all for it. Very dead period. Hopefully by the time the fall sports season rolls around, we're back up and rolling. So that'll be on the show today as well. 2 days away from the NFL unveiling the schedule for 2020. That'll be Thursday night, 5 p.m., right after Drive Time Sports. You can see which teams are going to play who, because that's already set. It never fails every year. Fans complain about the difficulty of their team's schedule. And I'll tell you, there's a very precise formula that the NFL uses. It's as fair as it could possibly be. And we'll talk about this a little bit later on. Right, because each team, you play 16 games, you will play 4 first-place teams, 4 second-place teams, 4 third-place teams, 4 fourth-place teams. That's the way the schedule works in the NFL. Now, when you have a very difficult division, a la the Las Vegas Raiders, the Denver Broncos, with the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs, yeah, the difficulty of your schedule goes up. And I'll tell you who, in my mind, has the most interesting home portion. If you're a season ticket holder for the Las Vegas Raiders, you've got to be thrilled with the group of teams that the Raiders will have coming in. We don't know who the international teams are going to be. We know the Dolphins will play one international game. I believe it was the Falcons was the other team. Don't quote me on that one. I know the Dolphins are one. I believe it is the Falcons. That's the other team that'll play an international game. But I want to look at the formula that the NFL uses. And again, I want to talk about the Las Vegas Raiders and their home games. Of course, we're a Raider affiliate. We'll have all the play-by-play action with Brent Musburger and Big Lincoln Kennedy right here on Drive Time Sports. Looking forward to that. And we'll also have a conversation about the NBA. I think it's an interesting one to have. I guess we can relate it back to the Last Dance documentary, parts 5 and 6, and I believe this was episode 6, if memory serves me right. It might have been episode 5, I can't remember. The Dream Team, the 92 Dream Team. The impact that that team had on the game of basketball globally, it could never be overstated. I don't believe that's the greatest team ever assembled as far as the dream teams are concerned. I really like what we had in 2012. I like what we had in 2008. At that particular time, as far as the namesake of those players, I mean, it was second to none. But there are variables you have to consider. Larry Bird was not in his prime. Magic Johnson had been retired from the game of basketball. Right? I think it's a fair argument to say that David Robinson was just entering his prime at that time in the Dream Team. He wasn't dead center in his prime yet. So there are variables to consider, which I guess really brings even more relevance to the question, why was Isaiah Thomas not on the 92 Dream Team? And that was a heavy focus on a section of this Last Dance documentary. And I think you could look at this a couple of different ways. Was Isaiah Thomas deserving of it? Yeah, I think he was. Ultimately, I do not believe he should have been on the Dream Team. I really don't. Was he capable skill-wise? Absolutely. And I respect the hell out of what Isaiah Thomas managed to accomplish over the course of his career And there are people that still today, they are outraged over it. It is a fun conversation to have. I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer. He wasn't on the team, and the team fared quite well. But look, let's be honest. I could have been the 12th man on that roster. They're still going to win gold. It really didn't matter. But Isaiah still to this day, he says it bugs him that he wasn't invited to be on that team. And Michael Jordan says in the documentary, look, he wasn't on the Dream Team. I didn't have anything to do with it. Mike had something to do with it. But so did a number of other players. And it's a fun conversation to bring in, talking about the Detroit Pistons as well, a team that won back-to-back championships. I'm looking forward to that talk. We'll dive into that a little bit later on in the show. But like I said, a couple of fun conversations that we'll get into later on here on this edition of the show. Let's take a look at some of the national headlines. And I will tell you, this is an interesting story as well, coming out of college athletics. Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick did an interview today over Zoom. He says he's confident that Notre Dame will in fact play a full football schedule. But Notre Dame and BYU and independent schools in football really have something to worry about, I think, going into this next season. If the decision is made to shorten the college football season, let's say that it's conference only. That's how they shorten it. What would Notre Dame and BYU do? Jack Swarbrick says there's already a plan in place if that was the case. Notre Dame has plenty of Power 5 opponents for this upcoming season. They have Arkansas, USC, Stanford, Wisconsin, and then, of course, they play six from the ACC per its agreement with that conference. Notre Dame is scheduled to face Navy in the season opener in Ireland. That's not going to happen. That could potentially eliminate the 11th game for Notre Dame. Swarbrick was having a... He says he's in constant conversation with the 10 FBS commissioners. And he said that one of the models would include a plus one. And I'm really shocked that we haven't considered this yet, right? This is a really relevant conversation to have. So to protect out-of-conference rivalries, and there's a lot of them, conferences would play a plus-one model. Well, when you look at what Notre Dame has outside of its Power 5 opponents, because they're going to play the ACC. USC, that's a rivalry game. Stanford, that's a rivalry game. Wisconsin, I don't know. I would assume that Wisconsin would want to keep Notre Dame. I believe Arkansas would want to keep Notre Dame as well. But you take a look at other rivalries. Clemson, South Carolina. That game needs to continue, right? This is a really relevant conversation, and I think it's something to pay attention to, especially here in the state of Utah when we're talking about BYU. The big difference between Notre Dame and BYU, BYU is not an elite rival on other opponents' schedules. I definitely want to have a deeper conversation about this topic later on in the week. I never even thought of this until I was watching this interview with Jack Swarbrick today. He said there's a wide range of questions, a lot of handling going on right now in the athletic department, but he said he is absolutely positive that Notre Dame would have a place among the college football playoff conversation with a full schedule. But again, that brings up the question with BYU. Let's break for just a moment. Local sports recap is coming up. And then again, we're going to be joined by Casey Edgehouse, coach of the Emory High School Golf Squad. That's coming up next here on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios.
What you listening to?
Big sports radio guy.
Prepare the water cooler that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
There hasn't been a lot going on in the local sports front. We have had some news as far as the coaching circuit is concerned. We have a new head coach of the Emory boys basketball team. That's Coach Jeff Cincineros. New head coach of the USU Eastern men's basketball team. That's Bill Evans. And today we're going to talk about another new head coach, Casey Edgehouse. He'll be taking over the Emory golf program, which should begin its season in August. Fingers crossed on that one, right? Trying to get back to the norm, hopefully, for the fall sports season. Coach Edgehouse is joining us over the phone right now. And, Coach, it's a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Definitely, Coach. I know it's an exciting time. It's a new era of Emory Golf. And before we talk about you taking over the team, let's talk a little bit about yourself. Those people will definitely know you from the Mill Site course, where you're the course manager.
Course manager. I grew up in Emory County, played on the Emory High golf team,
I've been the course manager for about 4 years now and just excited to get the new era of the Hammerhead Golf going.
Yeah, what was it about this job, Coach, that made you say, you know what, I think I want to try this?
Do you know what, I kind of grew up around golf and never really had much for a teacher. Had some coaches going on and a grandpa that really brought me out on the course. But being able to help these kids out with their golf game, and because golf is something they can carry with them throughout their life and they can really work at getting better now and then they can use that in the future.
Yeah, I like how you pointed out that kind of the connection with your grandpa. So as far as your days in playing golf, it was something that you picked up later? Is that kind of the way it worked?
You know what? I actually picked it up when I was about 8 years old.
Wow. Okay.
My grandpa brought me out here to Millsite when it was just 9 holes, and we started then, and it's just been a lifelong passion since then.
Yeah, Coach, how familiar are you with the actual Emory High School golf program?
A little bit. I've helped out here and there. Coach Reynolds did a great job with the kids, and I'm just looking to build on what he had. And we got some kids that are coming up that I've been able to be a part of. We had a junior program that began about 3 years ago, so I'm actually seeing some of the junior program stuff come into the high school stuff, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, as far as this team that you'll take over, I mean, every kid, if I'm not mistaken, comes back from last season.
Yep. We didn't lose any seniors last year. I've got a couple kids that will be juniors this year, a couple kids that will be seniors. I'm excited to see what they can do.
How closely did you pay attention to the results last year, Coach?
I followed it pretty closely. We had some good tournaments and some bad tournaments. We did make it to state, and I'm just looking to kind of get a little bit further.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some of the individuals that performed well at state. Trevin Wakefield was fantastic. I believe he shut the low score for the team in the first round. Talk to me about a kid like Trevin, and what are some of the things that he brings to the table as a golfer?
Do you know what? Trevin has a very good work ethic. He's up here every single day, working on his game, working with me. It's gonna be fun to see what he can do this year. I mean, he's been playing a lot better this year than he was last year, and I think he's just a little stronger, and his the mental game is definitely getting a lot better. So
you'll have Kavery Kilpak as well. I believe he shot a 95, if memory serves me right. So between Trevin and Kavery, two kids that perform well at the state tournament that you'll have back.
And Kavery's the same way. They're up here every evening working on their game. They will surprise some people this year.
Coach, it's such a difficult time to take over a program. We have so many new coaches here in the Castle Country, and with everything that's going on, what have you been allowed to at least try to look at or try to implement, being that it is May, before you know it, fall sports season's going to be here, but with everything that's going on with COVID-19, what have you been allowed to do?
As of right now, not much. The kids are able to come up to the golf course because the golf course is open. We're still allowing carts out, still getting people on the course, trying to take as much precaution as we can to keep the carts going out and keep people safe as they're up here. But as far as coaching stuff, I haven't been able to do anything.
Have you been able to even begin to think about when you want to hold tryouts or when you want to start your off-season workouts? Has that been a thought process at all?
It is. I've started to think about it, but I haven't been given the okay on when I can get going back with the sports. So I'm still a little clueless on when I'm going to be able to get the boys out here and start working.
Now, with you being so closely associated with the golf course in Millsite, when you look at the grand scheme of things of the high school golf program, how important is it to you to try to implement something to bring youth in? How important is that to a high school program?
Oh, to a high school program, it's crazy. Up until the last couple of years, like I said, we haven't had much of a youth program. Pretty much from 8 years on until they get into high school, they're just kind of left on their own. We implemented with a couple different courses a junior program that we play 8 tournaments in the fall, and it has been a huge success. We have tons of kids coming out, and you've already started to see some of the benefits of that, where these kids are actually learning the rules, learning golf in general before they get into high school and kind of get thrown into the mix.
Yeah, what's the biggest learning curve for a kid when they try to take in the sport of golf?
I would say the biggest learning curve is they're growing so much, and their body's changing as they're getting older into high school, and picking the right clubs, figuring out their swing and their strengths and their weaknesses and trying to work on those.
Again, our guest right now is Casey Edgehouse. He's the new head coach of the Emory High School boys golf team. Coach, let's talk about the home course, Millsite. We play in a region with a lot of beautiful golf courses. I mean, we'll get to see Cove View, of course, the Carbon Country Club. That's a very popular setting as well. I think if you polled the 6 coaches across the region, they would say that Millsite's one of the more challenging golf courses within this region, which ultimately should be an advantage for this Emory golf team.
Yes, for sure. And we do have some beautiful golf courses in the area, and it's fun to play them, but Millsite's kind of a different challenge on its own. It's a lot of target golf. If you miss a fairway, you're going to be in the desert. You're going to have to take some penalties. It's a tough course to get around, and with the boys being able to play this day in and day out, they learn some of the ways to work around the golf course and a little course management that gives them a little bit of a benefit over the other courses, for sure.
This may be a very tough question. It may be very vague, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What's the structure of a Coach Edchow's practice look like?
Do you know what? In the past, they've just been playing a lot of golf, just going out and playing nine holes. I don't feel like you get a lot better playing golf. I think you got to get better practicing golf. We're definitely going to work around the greens. I know that's one of the hardest parts for a younger kid is to learn a little bit of feel around the greens and figure out how to get up and down for par or birdie. So we're definitely going to work a lot around the greens, work on their swings. I have some great coaches that are going to come and help me. Jordan Leonard and my little brother Kyler are coming in to give me a hand with swings and course management and different things like that. So that's probably going to be the biggest thing, is getting these kids to where they can work their way around a course without and stay away from trouble.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up the coaching staff. It's always a topic if we're talking basketball, football, or baseball. I don't think that the assistant coaches get enough pub when we talk about golf. I mean, that's just as important in this sport.
Absolutely, and that's why I brought the two guys in that I did. Jordan was the golf pro up here for many years, and he's a great golfer. My little brother actually went to swing school down in Phoenix, and so I've got some good guys coming in to help me with some of these younger kids, and hopefully we can mold their swings and get them playing good.
Yeah, when you look at the region, I mean, it doesn't matter what sport we're talking about. Once again, it's so difficult. Carbon and Richfield, we'll see Grand, we'll see Emory. It's such a tough region front to back. So when you look at the competition that you guys will be facing, hopefully in the 2020 fall season, as everything hopefully settles down, when you look at the competition, does that excite you?
It does. Our region is always solid from top to bottom. Some of the coaches that we're coaching against and some of the kids that I've seen play over the years, especially when they come up here and play and see the way that some of the other teams compete at this course, even not having played it very much, it's going to be a great season. I think there's going to be a lot of competition. I think there's going to be some surprises.
What's your ultimate goal, Coach, for the first season as head coach with this program?
Go as far into state as we can. I know we have some individuals that I think can make it further into state than we have in the past. But I think just get to state and perform well there.
Again, Casey Edgehaus, our guest right now. And, Coach, as you mentioned, the Millsite Golf Course is still open. And with you being the golf course manager, it's an opportunity for us to talk about what's happening at Millsite. You've been very busy. I mean, I know that we have this social distancing thing going on at the moment, but you can still play golf and social distance.
Absolutely. We've done our best to try to keep the people on the golf course. We've opened up to all the state of Utah now. We kind of followed the southeastern Utah health department's a recommendation on keeping people just in the area golfing here. And so we've opened it up to the whole state now. We pressure wash and sanitize our carts after every use. And we're just booming right now. Lots of people coming golfing, and I think it's just going to pick up more now that we've opened it to the whole state.
Yeah, do you have any restrictions on how many people can be on the course at one time? How has that worked out?
No, we'd like people to call in for tee times. We still take walk-ons. We only allow one person in the clubhouse at a time. We're making sure that people don't pull the flag sticks out. We've put little foam cups in the bottom of it so that they're not out there reaching and grabbing the flag sticks and reaching in to get their balls. So it makes it a little easier on them and keeps them a little safer.
Any tournaments, Coach, up and coming?
Yep, I've got my Castle Rock Amateur on the 30th of May. It's kind of my big amateur of the year. Should have a good turnout.
Well, Coach, it's definitely fun to get you on and talk a little bit about the Emory program. I'm really excited for what the future will hold. I definitely look forward to talking with you again in the near future. Thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you too, Jordan.
Again, that's Coach Casey Edgehaus, new coach of the Emory Sport and Golf Squad. You can get a complete recap and write-up of the official announcement right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're just a couple of days away from the NFL dropping its schedule for the 2020 season. I mean, all this up-in-the-air stuff when we talk about the national sports scene
Major League Baseball? Are we going to get baseball July 1st? Are we going to get a conclusion to the NBA season? When's NASCAR returning? When's our next big boxing match? When is Dana White going to get the UFC off and rolling? The NFL doesn't care about any of that. They have found ways to twerk their offseason. And because of it, there are still some things incomplete, like player physicals for some of the free agent deals. But we had the draft without a hitch. We had free agency, which was a blast. And the NFL's just moving along, business as usual. I am not concerned about the NFL not playing a season. I believe that's going to happen. I think it's a slam dunk. As we talked about earlier on in the show, I don't know if that's the case for college athletics. That's a completely different beast. College football is not the same as the NFL. When you look at the amount of COVID-19 tests that the NFL could administer, by the time we hit August or September, it shouldn't be out of the norm to be able to divvy out, 150,000 to 200,000 tests for the season. And I say that number because that's exactly what you were going to have to do if you're going to test players frequently throughout the entire season, 150,000, 175,000 tests. I think by the time we hit August, September, that's possible. I'll tell you the one dynamic. If a player does test positive for it, and you got to quarantine that player for 2 weeks, that's a different dynamic, isn't it? I mean, could you imagine a major quarterback testing positive? He's out for at least 2 weeks, at least. So there's some dynamics that the NFL is going to have to adjust to. But I honestly believe we're going to move on to the season without a hitch. Maybe we get a 16-game season. Maybe it's a 14. Maybe it's a 12-game. I don't know. But I am very, very sure that we will get NFL football. And I don't know what that means for the international games. I'm curious to see if when the schedules drop on Thursday, what the international slate looks like. But as I mentioned, there's one team in particular that I think is going to have a fascinating home schedule. The NFL, I can't say they lucked out, but with the Raiders playing their first games in Las Vegas, and that's still going to take some getting used to, right? The Las Vegas Raiders. Almost got to remind myself, yeah, they're playing in Vegas this year. Oakland doesn't exist anymore. The home schedule for the Las Vegas Raiders is phenomenal. And it's sad that it may not happen in front of a capacity crowd. Because first things first, it doesn't matter who they play. They're selling out for the first 3, 4, 5 years in Vegas. I don't think that's a problem. And I'm not saying it's going to be a problem once the newness wears off, because I think the Raiders are heading in the right direction. And I think the Raiders have it's the perfect image for that market in Vegas. But this year, the home schedule is extraordinary for this team. So you have the divisional games. You have the Chiefs, defending Super Bowl champs. Wherever Patty Mahomes goes, sellout crowd, hands down. You have the Broncos. It's a rivalry game. Fans will come out in droves for that. I mean, even if you're not a Raider or a Bronco fan, I'm not a Raider or a Bronco fan, but I watch the Raiders versus the Broncos. You almost have to. It's a classic rivalry game. And you get the Chargers as well. So there's your three division games. And I think the Chargers are a real wild card going into the season. Yes, there may be some questions at quarterback, but that defense is so good. That's going to keep the Chargers in games alone. They have weapons offensively, and you have the storyline of when will Justin Herbert take over for Tyrod Taylor? Look, if things work out for Anthony Lynn, not this season, right? Herbert gets to sit a year. But nonetheless, those are three fascinating games, and they're divisional games. Now you take a look at the non-divisional games for the Raiders at home this year in Vegas. The Indianapolis Colts. Love what they're building in Indianapolis. They have knocked the draft classes out of the park over the last couple of years. You've got a kid like Darius Leonard on the defensive side of the ball. Fantastic patrolling the middle of the field. You have a Hall of Fame caliber guard in Quentin Nelson. I mean, really, I think the Colts have done a very good job through the draft. Now you add Phillip Rivers, which it's always fascinating when an aging quarterback tries to reinvent himself or at least have some success with a team that he'll never be remembered for. I mean, unless the Colts were to win a Super Bowl, you're going to remember Phillip Rivers as a Charger, which is another angle for this game. Love that matchup. The New Orleans Saints. It's Drew Brees' last hurrah. He's going to Las Vegas. That in itself is extremely interesting. You're going to get to see Drew Brees play football in Las Vegas. Surefire Hall of Famer, one of the greatest to ever do it. The Miami Dolphins, Tua Tagovailoa. That is going to be a storyline that you follow throughout the entire year. You have the Buffalo Bills. It's an interesting team, right? The Bills were great defensively last year. It's a good football team. And then you have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Everywhere Tampa Bay goes, they are going to be the big story. Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski. You look at the other options with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. This is going to be a very fun team. It's going to be electric anytime the Buccaneers are on the field. Even if the Bucs are just middle of the road. Let's say the Bucs win 10 games, 9-10 games. It's still going to be fascinating to see Tom Brady with Bruce Arians in a new environment. And that's the home schedule for the Las Vegas Raiders during their first season in Vegas. Chiefs, Broncos, Chargers, Bills, Dolphins, Saints, Bucs, Colts. It's a tough schedule. Now, their away schedule, a little bit more soft. Of course, you get the Chiefs, Broncos, and Chargers. And this is what you have to remind yourself, Raider fans. Your schedule is going to appear to be much more difficult than other teams based on the fact that you play the defending Super Bowl champs not once but twice because they're a division team. When you look at the Raiders' road schedule, it lightens up a bit. You get the Patriots, the Jets, the Falcons, the Panthers, the Browns. A little bit more soft than your division opponents plus Bills, Dolphins, Saints, Bucs, Colts. Really, I love the Las Vegas Raiders schedule. And I'm really curious to see how the NFL attempts to deliver primetime in Las Vegas. Now, on the flip side of that, you have the nicest stadium in the world opening up in Los Angeles in two teams, and I believe both are really wild cards. I don't know what to expect from the Chargers or the Rams this year. I think they both could be very good. I think they both could be middling. I don't think either one's going to be bad. The Patriots and the Jets get to play two games at SoFi Stadium this year. It's just the way it works. But that's interesting. How does the NFL handle the new stadium in Los Angeles, the new stadium, new team in Las Vegas with primetime? And you have to pay attention to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because, like I said, again, this is another team. They're going to be primetime wherever they go. Their home schedule, they have their division opponents, Panthers, Saints, Falcons. They get the Packers at home. Guaranteed that's primetime. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, maybe the last time we see that matchup. That's a primetime game. You get the Vikings, the Chargers, the Rams. That's the home schedule for the Buccaneers. Away, again, divisional opponents. You get the Lions, Bears, Broncos, Raiders, Giants. Raiders, Buccaneers, that's a primetime game. This is the interesting storyline for me as we get a little bit closer to the NFL dropping the 2020 schedule. And as far as the first game in the LA stadium, I think it's only right that it's the Dallas Cowboys. They should get to open that in primetime. Because without Jerry Jones, that incredible stadium in Inglewood that's like $5.5 billion or whatever it is now, that stadium wouldn't be there without Jerry Jones. Right? So to me, it only makes sense. Primetime game should be Rams-Cowboys, the first game in SoFi Stadium. Now, this may change because, again, there's no fan involvement. Oh, but still, that should be a primetime game. You got to showcase this stadium to the country because now it has set the bar for the next stadium. And without Jerry Jones, it doesn't happen. The Rams are probably still in St. Louis, and the Chargers and the Raiders, they may be in Carson City in a much lesser stadium, right? So these are storylines that I'm looking forward to as the NFL gets set to release its schedule. And of course, we'll talk about the Denver Broncos and their opponents. So again, you know, Chiefs, Raiders, Chargers. Their home games, Bills, Dolphins, Saints, Bucks, Titans. It's a tough home stretch. Away, Patriots, Jets, Falcons, Panthers, Steelers. It's not necessarily easy, but again, their home schedule, much more difficult in my mind than what the Broncos have coming away. The placement of games, the Monday night games, the Thursday night games, I love this aspect of the NFL season. We talk about this every year, right around the time the schedule drops and some of the games that we can't wait to see. For me, one of the marquee matchups of the year, Brady with the Buccaneers, Rodgers with the Green Bay Packers, because historically, it may be the last time we get to see that matchup. And that would be a fantastic way to open up the season as well. If you're looking at the Chiefs schedule,
you know, if the Chiefs are going to open up Thursday night, if it's at home, well, Patriots would have been an obvious choice for that game. Not anymore. And if you go out of division, which it probably should be for the first game of the year, you're looking Jets, Falcons, Panthers, Texans. So I'm just curious to see how the NFL dictates these games, how they pick prime time with everything that's going on. But don't forget, the way the NFL puts their formula scheduling together, this was implemented in 2002. It's nothing new. Home and away against its three divisional opponents at six games, four teams from another division within its conference, and that rotates on a three-year cycle. Four teams from a division in the opposite conference, that rotates on a four-year cycle. Two interconference games based on the previous standings, that's two games as well. And so hands down, it's the easiest, most fairest way to put together a 32-team schedule, yet every year some fan base is upset, complaining that the NFL schedule makers were unfair to them. One of the only changes, back in 2010, a change was made to how teams are paired in the schedule rotation to make sure that teams playing the AFC and NFC West divisions would not be required to make two road trips to the West while other teams in the division wouldn't have any, because you're traveling all the way across the country. That's just an example. But we do know the NFL season right now, it's scheduled to kick off September 10th, and it will end after week 17, which is played on January 2nd. That's what we know for the time being. Full schedules will drop on Thursday. We're going to break for just a moment. We'll come back and move over to the NBA. I asked the question, should Isaiah Thomas have been a member of the 1992 Dream Team? I think this is a fascinating conversation. We're going to talk about that when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
We have talked an awful lot about the Last Dance documentary on ESPN, which chronicles the final season of the Chicago Bulls dynasty. But I'll tell you, if you haven't watched this yet, it brings up some other great topics, some other great storylines regarding basketball that goes well beyond just the Chicago Bulls. For instance, this last weekend, the 1992 Dream Team was a focus on a section of one of the episodes. And regardless of my opinion of the 92 Dream Team, and again, at that particular time, you had a lot of players that were not in their prime, and we'll talk more about this in just a moment. But Magic Johnson had been retired. Larry Bird had a bad back. I don't know that David Robinson had reached his prime as of yet. A lot of storylines like that surrounding that team. Now, there's no question it was the greatest group of collective names ever assembled for a team, and I don't think you can question that one bit. But in the documentary over the weekend, the idea of Isaiah Thomas not being on the 92 Dream Team was brought up. And I think it's such a fascinating conversation to be had, because Isaiah Thomas, was he a top 12 player in the NBA at that time? Yeah, you can make the argument. I mean, if you go back and you take a look at the all-NBA squads, Isaiah Thomas, even in 89, Isaiah Thomas wasn't a first team, he wasn't a second teamer for guards. That belonged to John Stockton. All the way across the board, Stockton was really receiving more recognition at that particular time in his career than Isaiah Thomas. In 1987, it was Clyde Drexler and John Stockton on the second team. In 88, it was John Stockton and Kevin Johnson on the second team. In 89-90, it was John Stockton, Kevin Johnson. It was Stockton on the third team, 1990-1991. It wasn't an Isaiah Thomas league for backcourt presence at that particular time. And I'll bring in Travis Anderson, who I know believes full-heartedly that Isaiah Thomas should have been on that Dream Team, though he wasn't. It's a fun conversation to be had.
Yeah, absolutely thought he should have been on the team. Didn't work out that way. But for Isaiah's case, though, he really didn't help his cause. I mean, a lot of those players, they can say what they want, but, you know, probably 80% of them didn't want him on the team. He wasn't well-liked.
Well, no, and look, the Pistons are beloved by a group of people because of the way they played basketball. Rick Mahorn, Bill Laimbeer, Dennis Rodman, Isaiah Thomas, they were roughnecks. They would go out and they would beat the hell out of you. They may have respect, but in the same token, they weren't well-liked. And I'm not saying that this was a popularity contest, but when you look at the idea that, okay, so say Michael Jordan, I do believe Michael Jordan said, I don't want him on the team.
I agree.
It's been documented that Michael Jordan said that.
Yeah, he didn't want him on there. And if Michael Jordan doesn't want him on there, the guy that they're marketing, you know, Team USA around, he's not going to be on that team.
Yeah, look, and again, that is documented, right? It's in a book, Jack McCollum's Dream Team book. He has the quote of Jordan saying he didn't want to play if Isaiah was on the team. But I think it goes beyond that, right? So I've heard people tell me that he should have been on the team over John Stockton. I don't think so. I mean, if you tell me that Isaiah is better than John Stockton, I think you have a fair argument. I don't know that he was. It's an argument that's worth having. Who's the other person you'd put him on the team? Who would you take off that team to put Isaiah on?
I'm taking Christian Leitner off.
But you can't, because the 92 Dream Team was based around marketing, right? And at that time, they saved one spot for a college player.
But that's that's the guy I'm taking off.
But it's not even a fair comparison, because Leitner was a forward, right? So to me, the only guy you could take off that list is Magic, because Magic was not in the league at the time.
And you're
and
not doing that.
That seems ludicrous, and you're not doing that.
You're not taking Magic off.
You're not
off
doing that.
Because Magic is so marketable with Jordan and Bird that you can't do it.
No, so here's the thing about the 92 Dream Team. It was responsible for the blow up of global basketball. Everybody knows that. But the 92 Dream Team, this was all plotted. It was plotted by David Stern, and this is why he's one of the greatest commissioners to ever grace professional sports. And a man by the name of Borislav Stankovic, and I don't know if you know who he is. He was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame in the early 90s. He was actually an administrator on the governing body of FIBA and International Olympic Committee. So he was actually responsible for saying, okay, we're going to allow professional basketball players to play in the Olympics. So this was plotted out. Stankovic and David Stern had this planned. Okay, so think about it. You're trying to globalize the game of basketball. Who was responsible for saving the NBA? There's two names. Who was responsible for saving the NBA?
Well, Magic and Bird.
Magic and Bird, hands down. Those two are responsible for saving the NBA, and even though it was a Michael Jordan league at that time, and he was the most recognizable athlete on the face of planet Earth, you had to include Magic and Bird, because again, there's more to the Dream Team than just building the top 12 best players. There's more to it than that. This was a plotted plan by two individuals to globalize the game of basketball. Magic and Bird have to be included on that list. There's no questions asked. They have to be on that list. Michael Jordan is the biggest athlete in the world at that time. He absolutely has to be involved in this process. So if MJ says, I don't want Isaiah on that team, let's go down the list. Do you think Magic's going to fight for Isaiah? I know they recently just made amends to their problems, but in 1992, Magic's not fighting for Isaiah.
Yeah, Magic's not.
Larry Bird's not fighting for anyone on that Detroit Pistons team, because they didn't like the Pistons. In fact, they hated the Pistons. Bird's not fighting for him. Karl Malone, John Stockton. Well, that was the same year that Karl Malone put, 45 stitches or whatever into Isaiah Thomas when he tried to drive to the basket, right?
Put him on his butt.
He's not fighting for this guy. There's nobody. Pippen's not fighting for him. Barkley's not fighting for him. There's literally no one on this team that is going to David Stern or even Thorne. And look, Rod Thorne is a guy that drafted Michael Jordan in 84. He's the one that called Jordan in 91 to ask him about playing on the team. You think this guy is going to beg Isaiah Thomas or fight for Isaiah on that team? No, the bottom line is, in my mind, and Clyde Drexler, people bring up Clyde Drexler to me. Stop. Clyde Drexler was phenomenal. Clyde Drexler was so good. We forget about it. Clyde Drexler probably was the second best player in the league in 1992.
Well, he was great.
You can make that argument. Magic was out of the league. Magic had retired. We had the Blazers and Bulls showdown in the NBA Finals. I think you can make the argument that Clyde Drexler was the second best player.
Yeah, that Blazers team wasn't very good. If you look at the roster from, you know, top to bottom, I mean, Clyde Drexler, you know, single-handedly put them in the NBA Finals.
Clyde was incredible. You brought up Christian Leitner. The NBA, again, it was a marketing plot. So the NBA wanted a college player on that roster. The league wanted a college player on that roster. And I know that you're a Kentucky guy, so it pains you to say this, but you got to admit, Christian Leitner is one of the most decorated college basketball players that we've ever seen.
Yeah, he's probably one of the top, 10 greatest college basketball players ever.
You can make that argument.
Yeah. I mean, what he did in college at Duke was incredible. He was great. Fantastic.
So the only other college player that you could even remotely think about replacing Leitner with would have been Shaq at that particular time. Which is fine. Yeah, maybe there should have been a spot for Shaq. But still, it doesn't help Isaiah's cause. And then you take a look at point guards, and from a marketing standpoint, you have to have Magic on the roster. And honestly, Travis, I know you think that Isaiah was better than Stockton. And again, I believe that's a fair argument. I don't necessarily agree. At that time, he was not better than John Stockton.
No, at that point, he wasn't. At that point, Stockton was the second best point guard, you know, behind Magic on that team.
Stockton was probably the best point guard in the NBA.
Yeah, in the league, because Magic didn't play. But on that roster, yeah, he's second behind Magic. But in the league, yeah, he was more. I think Isaiah was a better basketball player than John Stockton. Stockton would be third on my list behind Magic and Isaiah.
Look at the reason why Stockton was never a part of NBA all-first team selections. In 87-88, Stockton second team, Magic and Jordan are first team. 88-89, Stockton second team, Magic and Jordan are first team. 89-90, Stockton second team because Magic and Jordan are first team, right? Magic and Jordan are first team in 90-91. Magic is out of the league in 91-92. Clyde Drexler and Michael Jordan are 1 and 2 for guards. So that's what I'm saying. John Stockton absolutely deserved to be on that roster. I think it's a fun story, though. It's a fun conversation to have. Isaiah Thomas not on the 92 Dream Team. All these years later, we're still talking about that. Let's break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll put the final touches on this edition of the show right after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
You're out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Couple of fun conversations in the can. Do not forget, you can listen to Drive Time Sports on demand at CastleCountryRadio.com. Tomorrow's show, we'll have a fun conversation about Major League Baseball. Bill Lasky will join us. Plus, we'll talk about horse racing. And we didn't have the Kentucky Derby this past Saturday. That's coming up tomorrow on Drive Time Sports. Be safe. I am out.